Conrad.
Godzo was strong. Oh,
that's the only impression I can actually do is Baratheon saying more wine. More wine!
Episode 92 of There Is No Offseason, a baseball prospectus daily podcast focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley of the BP Fantasy Team, and I am joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and BP's minor league editor, Craig Goldstein. Brett? Yeah. Oh, God. Is that what you're BP's minor league editor, Craig Concepcion, I guess, is who we're going with tonight. I know it's been 3 weeks since our last episode of Tino, but apparently the Ringer binge mode jokes are not out of our system yet.
All I've listened to since then.
Yeah, I don't know when they're going to leave our system. they may never.
God, are you ready for this transition? Well, speaking of things that have left systems, we are going to talk to you about all the moves that are dynasty relevant that happened at or right around the deadline. So we will start in the AL with some of the headliners and move through that, and then obviously touch on the NL and sort of save our closer Rama bullpen thoughts for the end, because, you know, practically for Dynasty League, there's not a lot of wisdom we can share, but you guys, you're used to that anyway. So I think the biggest trade in terms of a player, you know, moving to another AL team is, unfortunately for me, Sonny Gray going from the A's to the Yankees for a package of Jorge Mateo, James Kaprielian, and Dustin Fowler, not Dexter Fowler. So, Craig, we'll kick off to you. You know, other than going to a worse ballpark but a much better team, does this move the needle for you at all on Gray?
No, I don't think that there's really much of a change. I mean, I think any concerns that you had with Gray kind of are still there. I guess the negative is that even with the Athletics, he had a 13% homer per fly ball rate, which is not really what you want. And I'd expect that to potentially tick up a little bit in New York, but he also keeps the ground on the ball so much. He's at just shy of 57% ground ball rate this year that I don't think it'll have a huge effect on his overall numbers. But I might expect a little bit of a higher ERA, but the true talent is still going to be there. And he's missing bats really well this year. His best rate since 2013. So I'm still interested in Sonny Gray. I think it was a really, really good pickup for New York, frankly.
Brett, that's all I got. what do you make of Jorge Mateo this year? Obviously, he's been, it's been pretty encouraging that he would be able to serve as the sort of headliner in a package for Sonny Gray based on his performance last year. Are you sort of a Mateo believer again, or do you think the Yankees did well to sell high here?
I mean, to be fair, he was probably only the headliner because they were dealing with Billy Bean. But
true.
I'm not down on Mateo. I mean, we talked probably a month or two ago around midseason ranking time. Why I don't think either of us are particularly down on we're particularly down on Mateo, even when he was struggling. You know, the fantasy appeal is still there. He's been hitting a lot better in double A than he was in high A, and now, if after you struggle in high A for a year and a half and you hit well for a month in double A, then you start getting all the when is he getting up to the majors tweets, which is extraordinarily far-fetched at this point. But you know, Mateo is probably looking with the A's if he can, you know, continue his reasonably strong performance. I think we might see him at some point in 2018. And he's certainly got a lot more paths to playing time there than in New York. You know, he's capable of playing short. He's capable of playing second. He's capable of playing center field, and he's probably going to end up wherever Franklin Barreto doesn't. And you know, he's still got the speed. The speed plays everywhere. You know, Mateo was never going to be someone whose value was going to see a big tick up because of Yankee Stadium. He just kind of is who he is. If it works out, he's, you know, maybe a 10 to 12 home run guy and a 50 steal guy. And that's just extremely, extremely valuable in today's fantasy context.
I was going to say Mateo is sort of like Barreto with all of the good qualities and bad qualities, like dialed up by 20%.
Yeah, he's like an uncompressed version of him.
Yeah, exactly. Craig, you know, maybe not even for dynasty purposes, but I think it's interesting that the A's were willing to send Gray to the Yankees for a package centered around two prospects who are currently hurt, and hurt in ways that are fairly scary. You know, obviously the success rate for Tommy John surgery is pretty high, but it's not a sure thing. And, you know, a lot of Fowler's value, at least dynasty wise, is based on speed, and he had a pretty gruesome leg injury. So, you know, does that sort of raise any red flags for you about Gray? Is that a bridge too far? Talk about all the different injury factors here.
Yeah, I don't think it necessarily means anything about Gray. I mean, I think the fact that we're at the point where we're talking about that it's a Billy Beane issue more than it is, yeah, like, you know, how far he's fallen in a few years. I guess it's a bunch of years, but he was still, you know, people would engineer ways that his trades made a lot of sense as recently as the Josh Donaldson deal. But I don't know. It's potentially, I mean, if you wanted to be the most optimistic, take the most optimistic interpretation of this deal, like, you could argue that at full health, or, you know, without the kind of the makeup issue and struggles that Jorge Mateo showed, you wouldn't get three players of this quality for Gray at another point. I don't know if that's true. I don't really believe that, but I think the risks are significant. I mean, these are real serious injuries. Like you said, Tommy John, the recovery rate is very good, but that doesn't take into account how well you recover, right? Like, it doesn't take into, if you show up in the major leagues and are terrible, you are still a successful Tommy John recovery in the statistics. And so that doesn't really get us where we need to go with Caprellian, especially since he's someone who had showed more velocity than we had seen in recent years. And that's kind of what propelled him to more of a front end of the rotation status, right? Like, when he was drafted, he was more of a safe college pick. And then he showed up at Instructs or wherever it was when he first showed up in Yankees camp. And all of a sudden he was throwing a tick to more higher in terms of velocity. And then he blew out. So the question is, does he come back showing that same velocity that he had right before he blew out, or more of what he was as a college pitcher, who was still good, but just not really exciting. And Fowler was considered, you know, a depth piece and a good depth piece, and maybe someone who was underrated at the time, but I think probably is going to be overrated on name value now, just because he was about to come up to the Yankees, and there's a lot of hype around that, and he was underrated, and anytime someone's underrated, they get, you know, hyped a decent amount. And now that he's in the trade, he's going to have some name value. But if he was maybe at the most a 2020 contender before, you know, this type of knee injury, we don't know how it's going to affect his power, because we don't know how it's going to affect his base when he swings, right? Where he generates his power, because he's not a huge guy. He's a great athlete, but he's not a huge guy. So we don't know how it's going to affect that. And then once he's on the bases, we don't know if it's going to, you know, legitimately sap his speed. And even if it takes him out of center field, then he's more of a tweener profile. And when that's the situation, it might be harder for him to find playing time. So there's a lot of risks involved with these guys that went from New York to Oakland.
Yeah, and there's no shortage of the Tommy John thing is spot on. I mean, it's really important to remember because, you know, it's still hard to kind of train ourselves to not be optimistic on people coming back from Tommy John because, you know, the vast majority of them do come back, but you know, the velocity increase is a big deal, and we've talked about this in the past with other players. You know, the guy who comes to mind for me with this in particular is Patrick Corbin, who was a guy who was, you know, he's not the same type of pitcher that Kaprielian is, but you know, Corbin was sort of a, you know, generic mid rotation starter at, you know, at best probably number four. And then ticked up in velocity, had a really good year, and then blew out, and then came back. Now Corbin's velocity is sort of the best of all worlds because he came back with his ticked up velocity, but the command never came back, and he's been pretty good since. But he's, you know, he has not been the same pitcher that he was before he blew out. You know, not to mention these guys that come back are elevated injury risks to boot. So, I don't think this is going to go down as one of Billy Beane's best trades, but to that extent, you know, Gray was also not the most reliable asset either, since his value this offseason would not have even come close to fetching this package 6 months ago.
No, but he's also showed himself to be the guy he was before this year, basically.
Oh yeah, he's right in line. If you look at with Sonny Gray, you look at his career DRAs by year, he's 2.66 in his rookie year, 3.14, 2.97, 4.11 is the outlier from last year, and he's back to 3.10 this year. I mean, he's Sonny Gray. The question is,
and with a tick more strikeouts, which is what always worried me about him as a fantasy starter. Not really worried, but it kind of capped his upside a little bit.
Well, and especially now, you need to have a baseline level of strikeouts to be a viable SP2,
right?
And Gray, up to the last couple of years, Gray was not at that point, even when he was pitching pretty well.
I agree.
But when he's striking out a batter per inning, now you're talking about a viable SP2, someone who probably sneaks in as a top, you know, a top 25 starter at this point, 25 to 30, somewhere in that range. But
yeah, I mean, it's the problem I have with Marcus Stroman, who is very good, and I buy the ERAs. I know he's an excellent pitcher, but there's a problem with his strikeout rate, and that is just he's good without it, but it limits the fantasy upside. I mean, that's just something you have to accept.
Mm-hmm.
The other point I want to make on Kaprielian that I didn't before is that he's thrown 56 innings, I think since turning pro. He threw 27 innings last year. At some point, he's going to have to go on their 40-man. So, these guys come back from Tommy John, but I don't know that we can really ballpark, unless they want to get aggressive with his recovery, when he's going to be able to throw a full season as a starting pitcher. And they're going to have to put him on their 40-man at some point, and that's going to, you know, eat into his options. You know, and he's already 23, I think, this year. So you start running out of that upside time, right? Because if he doesn't get a full, you know, MLB season, even if you want to say that's, you know, 180 innings now rather than, you know, 200 or more, you know, that might not be till 2019. And so if you're trying to take advantage of kind of his valuation, you really have to factor that in.
Yeah. Just one last thing on Kaprielian. It's more of a question. You know, you talk about the risk in what it looks like when he comes back. And he's now going to be marked as a guy with an injury history, as he rightly should. Would you rather have Kaprelian or Michael Maduela in a dynasty league right now?
I got a really good report on Maduela from Jeff Paternostro.
Yeah, I mean, that's a scenario where Maduela has the lengthy injury history.
Yeah.
And he probably, Kaprelian, when healthy, was a better prospect than him last year.
And Maduela is throwing now.
But yeah, he's got it now.
So many times. Yeah. He has TJ on the resume. He had an arm injury. He has, I think, an existing back condition. That's tough. He does, yeah. It's tough. I think I'd still take Kaprelian, but I think that's a fair question. And that might change by season's end.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'd take Maduela. I think it's an interesting point of comparison and at two pitchers that are just at different points in their road to recovery and the majors, but it just underlies that you just don't know. There's so much risk involved in even healthy pitchers in the fantasy world that, you know, you throw in the injury risks and then everything kind of goes up in the air.
Absolutely. All right, Ben, come back.
Hi, Ben.
I think that's it for episode 92 of Tino. As always, please rate and review this podcast. All right, so after that brief take on Gray, there were a few other trades in the AL. So, Craig, who was the move more advantageous for? Eduardo Nunez or Todd Frazier?
Yeah, I don't know that the situation changed that much for either of them. I mean, I guess, you know, Frazier has probably a better place to hit. I mean, not compared to guaranteed rate or whatever you want to call it, but just compared to Nunez, and that plays to his power a little bit more. But, you know, maybe, I guess, going from AT&T to Fenway for most of your games, or at least, you know, around half of your games, is a difference maker for someone like Nunez, who already kind of doesn't provide anything with power. So now he's in a much better place to hit for power. And so, you know, maybe that ticks up enough that it's useful, because, I mean,
already got two bombs.
Yeah, exactly. I guess maybe that's the point. Yeah, I think that's probably, I'd go with Nunez, because I don't think he's hitting those home runs in AT&T or in most of the NL West parks.
Mm-hmm. Something else that's cool about Nunez, it's unfortunate because Dustin Pedroia is on the DL, but he's now playing second base every day, which means that at least in leagues with 10 game per eligibility rules, he's going to be eligible at second, shortstop, third, and the outfield next year.
That's extremely useful.
Yeah, that'll be a pretty... That'll make him a pretty nifty own, even in sort of shallower leagues, just because he'd be the perfect, you know, plug and play guy for some extra steals and batting average whenever one of your main guys goes down.
And in a dynasty sense, sorry, Brett. I mean, it is Nunez, because Frazier is, I think, on a relatively steep decline. The power is nice, but you're not getting anything else.
Yeah, he's a one-trick pony at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing, depending on your league rules, even if you have a 20-game eligibility, if he probably won't get there at either shortstop or second base, but he has 15 games at middle infield. So if he plays five more games at second base, at least on CBS, most places he should qualify at middle infield, which would be a boon. Anytime you can get middle infield eligibility, that's pretty enjoyable.
Brett, I challenge you to say something interesting about Francisco Liriano, Jeremy Hellickson, or Trevor Cahill.
I will say something interesting about Francisco Liriano.
But you were wrong.
What?
Is it that you were wrong?
About Liriano this year?
Yeah.
That's where I need George to come in with the Yas Queen that we were discussing earlier. Yeah. Was the new sound effect.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, George, when are we getting sound effects? Like episode 150 or something?
He can't answer.
All right.
No, he can't. We can ask him when we stop. So my enthusiasm about Francisco Liriano as an endgame pitcher was misplaced this year. But you know, I just want to point out that relievers have more value than they used to, and some of the best relievers in baseball now were worse starters than Liriano. So I would not be surprised if he becomes kind of an interesting high strikeout reliever that you can use in really deep leagues. But you know, so I wouldn't give up on him entirely. I also don't think he's done as a starting pitcher in the majors, unless he's really good out of the bullpen. If he's just okay out of the bullpen, some team is going to try him again in the rotation next year. But you know, I'll be curious to see how that shakes out. But if there's something interesting to say about any of those deals in general, it's mostly that Derek Fisher is going to play in Houston now that what's left of Nori Aoki has been shipped out of town. He'll give himself a chance to to show that he can handle a 2018 starting job on this team. And you know, anyone with a power speed combination is going to be appetizing in dynasty leagues. So if Fisher can make the most of these next 2 months, you know, you could see him kind of weasel his way into being a really solid fantasy outfielder for the near future.
Craig, did you want to talk about Cahill at all? I know he sort of caught your eye pre-show discussion.
I mean, I don't. I think he's someone who's been really interesting this year as a starter in San Diego. I thought, just on the non-fantasy side of things, I thought it was a really interesting, good trade for Kansas City just in general. Yeah. He's striking out 26% of batters. Entering his start tonight. I know he didn't have a good night tonight. But he keeps the ball on the ground and he misses bats. And that's, and especially, you know, I know no one really wants to leave Petco, but going to Kauffman Stadium is not a bad place for him to be. And I know when batters do get the ball in the air, it tends to go out of the park, even in Petco. But again, he went to a pretty good place, to be, and I know he's missed time with an injury, but you know, I know he's also someone that George has been pushing a lot throughout the year, and I think George is actually right. I think he's an interesting guy, overlooked, and I think he ultimately landed in a space where he's able to continue maybe to be under the radar. I don't think that KC rotation gets a ton of attention, and I think given the time that he missed and that he was in San Diego, he's probably a little bit overlooked right now.
Fair enough. All right, so we're getting near the end of interesting AL moves. Brett, something that sort of caught my attention, you know, before and during the trade deadline was people started talking about, you know, Lucas Duda as potentially a bat, for the Red Sox, for the Rays, obviously, which is where he ended up going, for some other, offensively challenged contenders in the AL. And I was pretty unimpressed until I looked at Duda's numbers this year, which are actually pretty damn good. I mean, the average hasn't really been there, but we never think of Duda as a high average guy. So talk a little bit about what you've seen out of Duda this year and sort of, you know, what type of contract you think he's going to be in line for this offseason.
Sure. Before I talk about Duda, I'll throw out one Trevor Cahill stat that I love, which is Trevor Cahill has a 73% ground ball rate. But that's not the fun part of the stat. The fun part of the stat is that his ground ball rate is down over 10% from last year. Last year he was at 85%.
What? Trevor Cahill is a 50.
Oh no, I'm reading the wrong columns. Wait. Yeah.
He has a 57%.
He has an extreme ground ball rate, but I got a little excited when
it's
I saw
57,
that.
57, but it is down 6%. Points from last year when it was 63. So
it's down slightly, yeah.
But it's still very good. There it is, George. Thank you. Nailed it, buddy.
There it is. I should have just started talking about Lucas Duda. I'm going to start talking about Lucas Duda now. He's a good hitter. He does not, like Ben was saying, he does not get the respect of good hitters. But he definitely is one. The batting average is really never going to be there. He's always going to be sort of in that 240 to, you know, maybe 260 range, but he's a consistent 30 homer pace bat. And especially if you're in an on base league, he's a reliably above average on base percentage as well. I don't know where he ends up this year. First base and DH is such a weird spot because there's a lot of people having really strong seasons, and you never know how many of them teams are going to believe in. But my heart says that he's going to get a multi-year deal somewhere, but realistically, with what's on the market, he may end up settling for a 1-year contract with some incentives. He'll get paid, but not nearly as much as he should. I think if he has a strong finish to the year with Tampa, I mean, he's got a 1500 OPS in his first six games there, so continuing that would be useful. But he could play his way into a multi-year deal, and honestly, I think he deserves one.
Yeah, I'm surprised that you, like you're saying, with what's on the market. I mean, I know Hosmer's on the market as a first baseman, but the 20.
Well, yeah, I don't mean just. I don't mean
bad overall.
Yeah, I don't mean just the free agent market. I mean, there are first basemen available to trade for everywhere. So it's the combination of the free agent market and the trade market.
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, the A's have been trying to give away Yonder Alonso for.
Yeah, and he's a free agent, so I believe.
Yeah.
He will be.
So at some point, they will give him away.
Yeah.
All right, Craig, I have an even tougher challenge for you than I had for Brett. Say something interesting about Tim Beckham.
He's been weirdly good this year. He's been a league average kind of offensive performer, but in deeper leagues, which we tend to play in, he's been nothing but serviceable as a guy from, you know, who could fill in at middle infield. He has 12 homers and 5 stolen bases. He's hitting 265. I mean, all of that's going to play. He strikes out entirely too much and probably won't be able to keep this up. But, you know, he's in Baltimore, and Baltimore kind of has one of those things where they're weird semi-utility guys are really good. Like, it was Steve Pierce for, I don't know, like 3 straight years. It's obviously a good place to hit. I think he's moderately interesting for very deep leagues.
It's a nice place for a right-handed hitter to be. So
yeah,
that never hurts.
And I think he's hit since arriving there. I mean, I think the tough part is, I guess, is he playing shortstop for them? I didn't check that, but
for Baltimore, I think he's playing shortstop for now.
Yeah, because Hardy's a corpse at this point.
Yeah, I mean, he's done even if he comes back healthy.
Right.
He's an injured corpse.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, I guess the good news for him there is that the Tampa Bay situation was, I'm going to put quotes around this, but getting crowded because it involves, like, Taylor Featherston somehow. But with Adani Echevarria there and I guess Brad Miller got healthy and Matt Duffy might be getting healthy, his playing time kind of was less secure. You know, he was a first overall pick. He's not ever going to justify that, but he's not without talent, and he's having the best year of his career and is now not going to lose playing time. So I guess if you had him, you're pretty happy with that, right? I mean, you're pretty happy with the trade. I think he retains fantasy value. And I think, you know, if he's even moderately, like if he can be the league average hitter he's been, or even slightly worse, he probably locks himself into the shortstop job next year too.
Fair enough. So
it's depressing being an O's fan, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I do. I feel for them a little bit. Not enough to not root for this to happen. So I guess, Brett, I could be even more brutal to you and ask you to talk about Melky Cabrera. But instead, what did you think of Enya at the deadline? Episode 92 of Tino. I hope you used that break to do imitations of people on HBO podcasts who are themselves doing imitations of HBO shows, because apparently that's all Brett, Craig, and I are good for at this point. So we just touched on the AL, so now we will move on to the NL, which actually not quite as much action as the junior circuit, but we will see the Sonny Gray trade and raise it a Yu Darvish trade. Darvish obviously going from the Rangers to the Dodgers, which is just a little bit of an upgrade. So, Brett, how dramatically does this swing Darvish's value for you for the rest of the season?
I think it swings it reasonably heavily. I mean, when you look at pitchers and when they're moving from one place to another, you really look at four major things. You know, you look at the league. So he's going from the American League to the National League. That's a plus in general. You look at the ballpark. He's going from Arlington to Dodger Stadium. That's another plus. You look at offensive support. You know, that's even with the Rangers' home park, you know, their offense has not been great this year. Going to LA, both will have a little bit more support there. And you look at the catcher he'll be throwing to, and Jonathan Lucroy has, for as much reputation as he has been the worst player in baseball this year by BP's metrics, and he's been either the worst or the second worst framer in baseball. On the other end of the spectrum, you have Yasmani Grandal, who is essentially what Jonathan Lucroy used to be, or what some people think Jonathan Lucroy still is. The swing in all four of those things combined could be extremely noticeable. You know, his ratios are somewhat disappointing now, but you know, my expectations for Darvish the rest of the way in LA are, you know, an ERA somewhere between 2.5 and 3, a whip. You know, he's never going to be a extremely low whip guy, but you know, a little bit above 1. I think the strikeouts are going to jump a little bit. I think he's going to be really good the last 2 months, and I think that, you know, whatever this does for him in the long term, I think it's going to sort of reinvigorate the excitement around Darvish in dynasty leagues, since, you know, we don't know where he's going to end up 2018 and beyond.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I don't think there might not be another player whose short-term value swung as dramatically as Darvish's did. But Craig, if we flip sides into what the Rangers got back, I mean, Willie Calhoun's long-term value did what Darvish's short-term value did, right?
Yeah, I mean, in essence, the big thing is going to an American League team, right? Like,
yeah.
We all, I think, in any Dodgers trade, when they were looking at, be it relievers or starters or whatever, the first name you kind of put on the table, not if you're the team requesting, you want, you know, a Buehler or a Verdugo or a Yadier Alvarez. And that's all well and good. But the name that made most sense for a team to want and the Dodgers to want to offer up was Willie Calhoun, because he's a second baseman in name only. They've trotted him out to left field a little bit, and that's not really going to work either. So he's in all likelihood a DH. And it's tough because you can't, and I think we talked about this, but you can't even, we talked about this in relation to a guy like Francisco Mejia when he was potentially going to be when we're talking about how much he's going to catch and if he can take time and play first base or whatever it might be, you might want to say that for Calhoun, who's a DH, but he's listed at 5'8". He's probably closer to 5'6". He's probably close to 200 plus pounds. And as I said on Twitter, the thing about him is he can fucking hit, but he can't play defense at second base, as I said, in left field, and he's too small to play first base, really. So he really is going to have to be a DH, and if you're thinking, you know, a guy at that size, that weight, as a designated hitter seems unlikely, well, it might seem that way, except he walks, I don't know, about 8% of the time, no matter what, and he strikes out just barely into the double digits, and he absolutely mashes. He has 23 home runs at AAA. He's under 23 years old. He hits for power. He hits for average. He was hitting .298 at the time of the trade. He hit a home run tonight in his first at bat. He can really hit. And what he needed was a place that could slot him into designated hitter. Now, there's still a little bit of a tough road to hoe in terms of there are always going to be other hitters that might fit in as a DH in a team's plans, you know, a little better. But the point is that he has the option to at least get some time there. And if they want to try and have him fake it at second or left field, you know, they might try that. But I think ultimately he's going to be a DH, and I think he's going to hit enough to justify it, honestly.
I am in this just for the pictures, the inevitable pictures of Willie Calhoun next to Joey Gallo.
Yeah. I mean, we probably need him near. They need to get, I guess that's the closest you're going to get to Aaron Judge in that situation. But he
probably. I mean, the thing that's really important to watch with Calhoun, and I agree with everything that Craig said, so I don't want to duplicate anything, but he's in AAA. Where the Rangers play him defensively in Round Rock the rest of this season is going to tell us a lot about what their plans are for him in 2018. If they play him pretty consistently at left field, you know, he played left field, I think, in his first game. I think he's playing left field again tonight. If they're committed to playing him in left field, then that means that they are at least giving thought to having him compete for the left field job next year. So while he's probably a DH in the long run, he's young, he's got enough athleticism to fake it at a couple of positions, and which position that is could make, you know, a little bit of a difference in his value.
Yeah, he is at left field tonight, by the way. And one thing on Darvish that, I mean, Brett hit the nail on the head with the switch to, I think, from Luke Roy to Grandal, but the Dodgers do give Grandal a decent number of days off. But it's also worth noting that Austin Barnes has been a really good framer in his time back there, dating back to last year. So pretty much no matter who's behind the plate for LA, you're going to see a noticeable tick up.
All right, Craig, give us 20 seconds each on how is he not already a Rangers prospect, Brendan Davis and AJ Alexi.
Yeah, Brendan Davis is 6'4", really wiry. He did add 15 to 20 pounds over the offseason, but it's not really enough. He's still pretty skinny. Power potential, very athletic, not a shortstop, probably a third baseman, might not work out. I mean, that's, you know, it's the Rangers athleticism thing, but so he certainly fits in the org there. AJ Alexi got just under $600,000 as an 11th round draft pick for the Dodgers last year. He was kind of 88 to 92, and so the fastball is kind of fringy. Flashed a plus curve, probably consistently less than that though, and the changeup, as low A pitchers tend to have with their changeups, is developing, as you'd say. I think there's the potential for him to be a three pitch guy. And, you know, he forced his way onto the low A roster despite being drafted last year, which out of high school, which says something. But it's kind of a long way off. More of a guy to keep an eye on and someone to invest in right now.
Sounds good. So the last sort of marquee name we're going to discuss tonight, and I know it's been a little while, but I think we just missed it on the last Tino, is Jose Quintana staying in Chicago, but definitely getting the better end of the two Chicago teams for right now. I mean, Brett, you know, a lot of what you said earlier with Darvish, the swing in parks is not as favorable, but, you know, just by virtue of going to the NL and going to a much better team, I can assume it's a moderate but not monumental upgrade for Quintana's fantasy value?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, Quintana has not had the greatest year this year compared to his previous years, but he's really been the same guy. I mean, Quintana is, he has a 3.92 DRA this year. His career DRA is 3.92. So you kind of know what you're getting with him. The Cubs defense is not what it was, but Wrigley is still, you know, a pretty good place to pitch. I think he's certainly bumped up his value, and I think he should be valued somewhere similarly, somewhere around where Sonny Gray is, sort of that, you know, kind of either barely in or barely out of the top 30 pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't think anyone is either expecting Quintana to be an ace or expecting Quintana to be terrible. So I think he just kind of is what he is.
That's fair. Craig, I want you to tell us about Dylan Cease. And Brett, while Craig is telling us about Dylan Cease, I want you to think of a way to describe Eloy in 6 words.
Okay. Dylan Cease is healthy, and that's kind of the biggest thing that he's had going for him this year. He's been a dynamic starter pretty much whenever he's been on the mound. I think the fastball is, you know, flirts with 100, certainly has hit 98 in the past. Hammer, curveball, easily a plus pitch, could be better than that. Problem is command and control. He walks guys around 12%, was higher last year. And this year he's missed a bunch of time throughout his career. He only threw 44 innings last year. He's already up into the 60s this year, which is, again, a good sign. He's missing bats extensively, and he's doing it at low A and full season ball, which is great. He's still walking a ton of guys, and that third pitch is going to matter, as is his ability to stay on the mound. I mean, that's what he's going to be, and it's probably what he's going to be until he shows that third pitch, stops walking guys, and stays healthy. I mean, he's always going to tantalize, but people have put a bullpen projection on him because the two pitches are so good and the health issues. So, you know, it's just a wait and see on the rest of it.
All right, Brett, you've had time.
Okay, my 6 words on Eloy Jimenez. Holy fuck, where did that land?
Fair enough, and I can't wait to read the iTunes review we get that needlessly criticizes you for saying the F word. Did you guys see the dude on Twitter who just goes oink oink at people on baseball Twitter who say fuck?
I saw when you interacted
with
him. I want him to be my friend IRL. So oink oink man, if you listen to Tino, which I don't know why you do, because we say the F word sometimes.
But give us an oink oink.
Give us an oink oink.
Just yelling it out the window right now.
I don't know. He's the best. I think he's like old, you know what I mean? And disappointed by today's youths. Well, which doesn't really count you two, but disappointed by today's relative youths saying oink oink. But I would like to get you a beer. Oink oink.
I want to know why oink oink though. Is that like?
I believe he's calling you a pig for using the F word.
Because it's filthy. Is that?
Maybe. I wonder if it's just Gamma.
That would be
like an alternate Peter Gammons account mad at baseball Twitter for swearing.
Didn't he get mad at Collins for swearing?
Yeah. Oh, he did. That's the public shaming of a Twitter miscreant. That's right. That Storify.
Yeah, that's right. I don't think Gammon needs an alt.
He doesn't, but I'm going to pretend that that's
okay.
What happened.
Yeah.
Okay. So Jonathan Lucroy to the Rockies, Alex Avila to the Cubs. No real meaningful long-term dynasty impact for either of these guys, right? Lucroy going to a better place, Avila going to a better place, but won't play as much.
I like that you're saying like they've died and gone to a farm upstate. Like,
have you seen Jonathan Lucroy this year? That's not an entirely inaccurate assessment for me.
That's true.
Yeah,
I think his outlook improved a lot. I mean, it's a good place to hit. Obviously, there's no long term value because he's a free agent. So who cares?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And this is a daily podcast focusing on Dynasty right. League and Keeper formats. So, right. Yeah. Okay. That brings us to JD Martinez. I don't really know what there is to say about him from a Dynasty point of view either, other than this feels like the type of situation where he could get himself an even bigger contract than we think he would get if he continues to mash down the stretch.
That was exactly what I was thinking. I think he could really, like, get someone to overpay in the offseason because the Diamondbacks stole him away.
That was bizarre.
I can't fathom it. But I think there's going to be an overcompensation because of it, right?
Yeah.
Like, people are going to be like, oh, he really is that. Like, yeah, he's been that good a hitter for, like, 3.5 years now. Like, this shouldn't be news at this point.
Yeah, you know who doesn't need to overcompensate is Adam Engel. I'll tell you that much. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I know that, like, you know, oftentimes we look at a trade and we say, oh, well, you know, they gave up their 8th and 12th best prospects. Why couldn't my team give up their, you know, 5th and 9th? And we know that's not the way it works IRL, right? Teams
Absolutely.
Focus in on guys they really want. You know, their evaluation is all that matters, not where we put them on lists.
Absolutely.
That being said, it seemed like a bizarrely small return for JDM.
Yeah, I could not agree more. I understand it's 2 months of a guy who's a zero or worse in an outfield corner, but, you know, again, you talk about, like, why weren't AL teams going after him? That's
very good question.
Yeah, it's baffling to me.
I mean, the only contender who really didn't have a space for him is the Indians. Maybe?
Yeah, right. I mean, because of Encarnacion. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I was someone who I thought he made a lot of sense for Tampa Bay, and I know they tend not to make aggressive moves, but, like, you don't have to make an aggressive move to beat that offer. He made a ton of sense for them, and they ended up doing the same thing with Duda, except Martinez would have provided right-handed balance for their lineup that they don't have right now, and they're going to end up sticking Dickerson in the outfield anyway. I think he would have made them a real contender for that division. And as it is, I think they kind of locked themselves into more of a wild card situation. So that really shocked me.
Fair enough. Okay, so you'll all notice that we've stayed away from talking about reliever trades for the duration of this podcast and really most podcasts, because there's just not any point in diving into this from a dynasty perspective unless you're talking about one of the really, really elite guys. But we still wanted to very quickly give a rundown. So the Twins, Mets, A's, Marlins, Tigers, and White Sox all traded away their closers at the deadline. The Mets, in a weird but I think pretty smart move, have sort of already taken care of their situation because they acquired AJ Ramos. So, you know, barring injury or a different acquisition, he will be the Mets closer next season. So that leaves the Twins, Marlins, Tigers, A's, and White Sox. So let's start with the Twins and Marlins first. Brett, anybody in those bullpens or in those systems you see as a potential next attractive fantasy option?
No. I mean, it's really a shame Pau Bearclaw is not healthy, because that would have been the good one in Miami. I mean, he has, when he's right, he's got the stuff to be, you know, a top half closer. But, you know, he hasn't really been right for much of the year. He still hasn't been terrible, but, and you know, it goes to show how good the rest of the Marlins bullpen is that even the way he was pitching, he still would have been the closer with Ramos gone.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they're going to give opportunities to Ziegler and maybe Tozawa if Ziegler sucks.
Yeah,
we could be getting to Dustin McGowan time soon.
No,
it's not
bad. And even
their
best young-ish reliever is Nick Whitgren, and he's not a closer. It's
rude as hell to Drew Steckenrider.
Yeah, I know. What are you going to do? Yeah, so that's a mess. When Barraclough comes back, I think it's his job, but you know, you never know. With the Twins, your guess is as good as mine.
Matt Belisle.
Trevor Hildenberger?
Maybe Matt Belisle. As bad as yours. Yeah.
I don't know. Taylor Rogers, the guy who I kept getting confused with Trevor Rogers around draft.
I think we've talked about this, but the Twins bullpen is just a shocking collection of names.
It is. Do you know who I want to throw out there as a sleeper for the Twins closer job? Kyle Gibson.
They're not going to do that.
They're probably not going to do that, but Gibson has the kind of arsenal that I think could translate pretty well into that kind of role. You know, he's got that same kind of Zach Britton vibe where, you know, he's just really been a not good starter, but he can keep the ball on the ground and he should tick up a little bit out of the bullpen. So I highly doubt that's in their plans this year because Gibson's getting the call to come back up and start on Saturday. But if they ever decided to move him into the bullpen, he would immediately become probably their best reliever and their best option for that role.
I mean, I think if you want to look a little further down, JT, I don't know how to say his last name, Chargois. Okay.
I'm pretty sure it's Chargois.
Okay, Chargois, yeah. He has been very good at AAA, I believe. Last time I checked, that was the case, and he was a pure reliever when he was drafted. I would expect him. He's on the 40-man. I would expect him to get a shot at this. And just the last thing on the Twins bullpen is, what do you think is more likely, that Alan Bucinich is a Major League Baseball player or the lawyer who just decided not to defend the president?
Lawyer.
Yeah.
He's definitely a corporate lawyer, but I just looked at Baseball Reference and it is JT Chargois. That seems like someone having a little bit of fun with Baseball Reference pronunciations, but God bless you, Sean Foreman.
Yeah.
Well, if there's anything we care about on Tino, it's making sure we pronounce last names correctly.
It's true.
All right, so for the Tigers, Shane Green is closing. I mean, it doesn't really matter with the Tigers because it's basically the defense against the dark arts position of baseball. Whoever is their closer will be dead, injured, or traded within 18 months anyway. But I guess the obvious
setup, man.
Yeah, pretty much. That's too soon. Joe Jimenez is the name to watch. I know he's walked a lot of guys in AAA this year, but he's also pretty much struck out everybody he hasn't walked.
Yeah, he's the heir apparent. It's just a matter of how much they care about arbitration costs once he shows that he can, you know, limit the walks in the majors, which I expect will be next year.
I mean, they'll probably just sign K-Rod again. You know, one of the Tigers or Brewers is just going to sign K-Rod until he's 64. I mean,
look, is there a chance that Green holds on to this at all? Like, he's a former starter. As Brett said, there are a lot of former starters that weren't even very good that have become elite relievers. I'm not expecting him to be elite, but good enough to hold down a closing job. Is it? I mean, what percentage would you put on it, Brett? Wow, nothing.
Not very good percentage,
Ben,
I guess.
Do you have a preference?
Yeah, I'm not optimistic.
Okay.
Shane Green seems like he'll be just good enough for the Rangers to trade for him at next year's deadline, and then he'll implode.
I'm not in an agreement.
Yeah. That sounds right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
When your upside as a closer is like a Bob Wickman fate, you're just kind of doomed from the start.
That's quite the
Joe Borowski.
I was going to say Borowski, but that seemed too mean.
Denny Baez?
Yeah.
Okay. So the A's and the White Sox, those are the White Sox, there's no one. They traded everybody who is even a little bit good and healthy. There is absolutely no one. Tyler Clippard is
They lost Nick Birdie. That was the... Zach Birdie.
Yes.
Zach Birdie.
Nick Birdie also lost. Yeah. They lost Zach Birdie.
They can rehab together. It can be really cute.
Yeah, so Tyler Clippard. Of the names left, I've got nothing. If I had to gamble on someone, it might be Aaron Bummer.
God, a closer named Bummer. It's just
too good.
It's too apt. He has to be a Ranger. Holy shit. Okay.
Michael Anoa is out there. That would be a... causing Ben pain. Mm-mm. Wait. This is a little off topic, but since we were in the vicinity of Detroit, Brett, do you want to wax poetic on Candelario? Do you think he gets a shot here?
On who? My internet cut out for
Jamer,
a second.
Jamer Candelario.
Yes. I wrote about this when we did the fantasy call up thing. You know, we've been talking about Candelario in the sense that, you know, the Cubs were just a really rough organization for him to be in because he deserves to be an everyday player somewhere. But he just needed to get traded, and then he gets traded to the Tigers, who literally have all their corners filled up. I don't know when the Tigers are going to give up on Victor Martinez. It probably won't be this year. But as long as they still have Castellanos, Cabrera, and Victor Martinez there and getting at bats, and unfortunately, it looks like it's still the waiting game for Candelario.
Yeah, rough landing spot. I'm sorry, Ben. Back to Closer-ama.
No, let's not. because now we're going to Oakland, and... Yeah. Let's talk about fun prospect call-ups instead.
Okay.
All right, so the big names. Brett, we'll start in your neck of the woods, because I think the highest-rated guy who's been promoted recently is Ahmed Rosario, who is playing in his second Major League game today, right?
Third. Today was number three, I think.
Today was number three. Okay, so you know, where do you view Rosario's MLB readiness right now? Do you think he sort of takes the job and runs with it and starts as your everyday shortstop next year? Do you anticipate struggles? What are you forecasting here?
I anticipate him having the job every day next year, but Terry Collins doing a weird thing this year where he will sit him one or two days a week to play Jose Reyes at shortstop and infuriate fantasy owners everywhere. I think there'll be some growing pains. I think he's going to show flashes of what we're excited about. I think he's got the potential to steal, you know, maybe eight to 10 bases the rest of the way. I don't think he's going to show much in the way of power. You know, the average should be decent if he can make enough contact. And, you know, I'm pretty confident that he can make enough contact to not be a hole there. But I want to be more confident in the playing time the rest of the way. I'm not.
Weird that you wouldn't have faith in Terry Collins' ability to manage young players.
Yeah, it's really shocking. I know.
Okay, my turn. The next highest rated guy is Rafael Devers, who already hit another homer and walked again tonight. You know, I've been out of the room with the TV for 90 minutes now, so I'm assuming he has three more homers. Of course, the league will adjust back to him, and I expect the slump to come at some point because he is, like, just 20. He's not even like full grown 20, he's like closer to 19 than 20. And he had very, very little time above double A. But holy crap, so far, so good. And that power that everyone has been saying was going to come is starting to come. He basically flicked his wrists on a pitch on the outside corner today and it went over the monster. So that's going to be pretty fun.
We had him, I think, number five at the midseason update, just the non-fantasy one. And as I was talking with Jeff Paternostro about it, we might have been low. We might have been low already.
Yeah, he's... I am a little more worried about him playing every day next season. I think it's likely the Red Sox will try to at least sort of limit their ability there. And, you know, if he struggles down the stretch and Pedroia gets healthy, he could lose playing time to Eduardo Nunez. But there's also just a chance that he, you know, Bogarts it and the job is his and he never looks back.
Yeah.
So today we had Ozzie Albies get called up for the Braves. So, Craig, Brett got Rosario and I got Devers, so I'm sorry you're getting Albies, but I love he's still pretty good.
No, he's very good. Yeah. He's very good. I mean, the fantasy aspect that people are going to be interested in is the speed. But he's kind of in a weird situation because the Braves are still giving a bunch of time to Yoan Camargo. They're still playing Matt Adams some, which means Freddie Freeman's at third base. And sometimes...
I think that experiment
is that official?
Like today. I think today they said that they're not going to do that anymore.
Yeah. So that clears up a little playing time because what's his name? Brandon Phillips is going to be playing third base, and I guess Albies will be at. Do you know? Has he been at short or at second?
I don't know where they're planning to use him.
I don't think it matters that much overall in a fantasy context. As long as he gets the playing time and he runs, that's really all we're looking for. He's been at second for the three games. I think my biggest concern is that when you look at again, there's danger in using the listed weight and height on his profile, but there's not a ton of guys in that range that have had a ton of success. I think I looked it up a while back when we were looking, you know, during list season, and you're talking about, you know, body comparables are like Luis Sardinas and Alexi Amarista. And it's not that I'm doubting his talent. I think his talent is extremely good, but he's fighting an uphill battle in that sense. And I just question whether he's going to have enough stock in his bat to make pitchers pay for really challenging him. And if he does, you know, maybe he's D. Gordon. And you know, D. Gordon's not the all-star that people thought he was, but he's still really useful for fantasy. And if that's the case, he's going to be well worth it. But I think, you know, the guys like Gordon are more the exception than the rule in this case. So I guess I might be the wrong person to talk about him, but I'd have a little trepidation and a little caution. Do either of you guys feel differently?
No, I have similar trepidation.
I'm a sucker for this profile, and as such, I'm unqualified.
Yeah, I mean,
to speak
Jose Peraza, right? I mean, that's the other argument in his favor, right? Like, Jose Peraza is not by any means lighting the world on fire. Still really useful. So, you know, at that point, it comes down to playing time.
Yeah.
But if you put Swanson back in this mix, you know, things get a little muddier. So that is a challenge as well.
That's fair. All right, we're going to do a false precision round for exactly two questions. Brett, do you prefer Harrison Bader or Jesse Winker?
Jesse Winker.
Craig, we all know what your answer is to that.
I'd still take Winker.
Really?
I'm not Bader. I don't like either of them, but I'd take Winker.
Right. Jesse Winker already has two homers in the majors. It was all a mirage. Jesse Winker, 25 homer threat.
I'm starting to think it was just a hustle.
Yeah, and what a lucrative hustle it was to be bad and not get called up faster. Okay, Craig, Eric Fetty, or Chris Flexen?
I'll take Fetty pretty easily. Flexen is not as bad as he's been in his couple major league starts, but it's a little early for him. I think the Mets would tell you they'd love to have not seen him in the majors this year. He's missed time in the past, and he's decent. But I'll take Fetty. I think he's ready, and I think he's actually pretty good.
Brett, Jason Concepcion or Mallory Rubin?
Oh, that's
one.
Well, you know what the right answer is, Brett.
The right answer is both.
The right answer is Enya. Back back to episode 92 of Tino. As always, we'll send you out with a little housekeeping. You can follow us on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find Brett at BrettSayerBP. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD
Consumer
as in
Darvish.
Goldstein. You can find our producer, George, at George Bissell. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening, and have a good night. It's like sometimes the show doesn't nail humor, but that was genuinely very funny.
It was. There were a couple points in that episode that were genuinely funny.
Oh my god, yeah, I laughed out loud at that one.